Republican Kristi Noem says if she's reelected to Congress, she'll focus on policies that would help grow South Dakota's economy. She wants to overhaul the tax code to help job creators and repeal what she calls job-killing regulations. Congresswoman Noem was first elected to serve as South Dakota's lone member of the U.S. House of Representatives in 2010. She serves on the Agriculture Committee as well as the House Armed Services Committee. She's being challenged by Karina Robinson in next week's election. She's with us on our line as we continue our candidate conversations. And Congresswoman Noem, thanks for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Absolutely. Thank you for the invitation, Carl.
Well, why do you want to go back to Congress for a third term?
Well, we've got more work to do. We've certainly had some successes over the last several years. I went out there focusing on tightening the federal budget, making sure that we didn't drive up debts and deficits like we've seen the several years before I'd gotten there, focusing on doing things at the national level like we do here in South Dakota. You know, spend our money responsibly, try to ease up on regulations that slow down the economy and make sure that we have a tax code that works. So we've been able to get some policies done and accomplished that have been good, but there's more to do, and I appreciate the honor of being able to still work for South Dakotans.
What do you consider some of your biggest accomplishments during your first 4 years in Washington?
Well, while I have been there the last 4 years, we've cut spending every year. The last two, we've cut overall spending, which is the first time that that's happened since the Korean War. And that was done with a president and a Senate that wasn't necessarily focused on reducing spending. A lot of their proposals were to increase, so to find some kind of area where we could get common ground and prioritize our federal budget dollars and make sure that we were reducing that was really important. We had a two-year budget agreement as well, which helps us focus on other policies, but I spent a lot of my time outside of those issues on the farm bill, and I believe we have one of the most reformed farm bills that we've seen in decades. It reduces spending, is accountable to taxpayers, but also gives us the safety net that we need in agriculture so bad, and it's especially important in South Dakota because agriculture is our number one industry.
You've been in Congress, as you know, going into your third term. What have been some of the biggest challenges that you see?
Well, I would say the biggest challenges that we've seen have been, you know, working with a divided government. We have a Democratic president, a Democratic Senate, and a Republican House, and sometimes the visions that are cast by the two parties can be very different. And a lot of times in politics, people focus on the things they disagree on, which we'd get a whole lot more accomplished if we could focus on some of the ways we can find common ground and actually get policies done that are good for the country. So I would say that's a big challenge, and also what we've seen is a lot of conflicts around the world that have arisen that are, you know, have to do with national security and keeping America safe. I serve on the Armed Services Committee, so a lot of my time is spent in briefings and in committee hearings dealing with different threats we face from terrorist organizations like ISIL, but also North Korea, what's going on with Russia and the Ukraine, Iran. So we certainly have seen a lot of developments around the world creating a much more unstable environment.
Well, you just mentioned the situation with ISIS, and you are, as you mentioned, on the Armed Services Committee. What is the best way the U.S. should deal with the militant group?
Well, we absolutely need a comprehensive strategy. What frustrates me is we see our leadership standing on national TV and saying what we won't do. You know, that telegraphs to our enemy exactly where we're most vulnerable. So I would prefer that the president lay out a comprehensive strategy to members of Congress for authorizations that we can do to destroy this organization. This is by far one of the most dangerous organizations that we've fought in recent days. They are better funded than any other terrorist organization. They fight like a military because they have those kind of resources, yet they're so extreme they were kicked out of Al-Qaeda. Yet many of their members have Western passports. They have access to the United States. And I'd much rather fight them there than wait until they are here on our ground and face that threat right at home.
Do you support the recent airstrikes?
I do. The president came to Congress and asked us for authorization to train Syrian moderates in the region. Also part of the actions that have been taken by the United States have been airstrikes in cooperation with a coalition of countries in that region. That was all something I could support, and hopefully everybody remembers as well that the Congress's job is to declare war, but also approve authorizations that the administration asks us for. There's some members of my party and the Republican Party that don't necessarily trust the president, and they would like to dictate how this war is fought, and I don't believe that that is correct. The president is the commander-in-chief. He is the one that needs to decide how we defend our country. It's our job as members of Congress to give him authorizations if we feel we can support them. And the only one he's come to us and asked us for so far is to train these Syrian moderates, and I was able to support that. Although I do have concerns that it may not be enough. The end of the year, they hope to have about 5,000 moderates trained and on the ground over there in the Middle East, but with ISIL's numbers over 40,000 and growing, they're certainly fighting an uphill battle.
Well, look, going back to working with creating a more functional Congress, I guess, the 113th Congress, the current Congress, has been called one of the least productive Congresses, at least in terms of laws passed and signed by the president. What is the reason for the low productivity, and how do you improve that? How do you change that?
Well, it has been frustrating, and one of the reasons Congress has gotten such a reputation for not getting things done, I believe, is because we don't get bills to the president's desk. And a lot of that is largely due to the Senate not passing legislation. We have over 380 bills that we've done through the House that haven't even been voted on over in the Senate. And when that happens and we can't get legislation to the president's desk, he's able to point at Congress and talk about how dysfunctional we are and by not doing our work. I really believe it's been a plan of Harry Reid's to do that so that we don't have to make tough decisions and it's easier for senators to get reelected in these election years. It's frustrating for me because we've certainly been working overtime trying to address some of the reforms that are necessary at the federal level. And I'm hopeful that when we come back, there'll be a different attitude and atmosphere showing that we need to work together to get these bills to the president, and then the president can decide if it's something he can support and sign into law or veto. Then more of the responsibility would be laid at the president's feet. If he vetoes something, well, then certainly the fact that it doesn't get done would be his responsibility, but if he chose to sign it into law, well, then we'd have real progress.
If Republicans win majority in the Senate, how do you predict things will change then in the next Congress?
Hopefully we would be able to find some real initiatives that would help us be more competitive to allow our economy to grow. We have seen our economy struggle. We haven't seen the kind of recovery that we would prefer. We've got a lower unemployment rate, but we have less people in the workforce than we've ever had before. We've got 40% more people in this country on food stamps than we did back in 2008. Now, half of our college students that end up with degrees are either unemployed or underemployed, which means they don't have a job in the area to which they were educated. So we've got some real improvement that needs to be done, and what I would like to do is, focus, hopefully with a Senate that would like to get rid of a lot of these regulations that cost businesses dollars that they aren't able to spend then in expansion, and also make sure we have a tax code that's competitive. We have a lot of loopholes, a lot of exemptions that have been built in over the year. We need to get rid of a lot of those and examine them, but also make sure that our rates are competitive so that our businesses stop leaving this country and choose to come back because those tax rates are equal to what we see in other countries.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with Congresswoman Kristi Noem, who's seeking a third term as our lone member of the U.S. House of Representatives. She was first elected in 2010. Congresswoman, in the past, you voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Would you still like to see that repealed?
Yes, that would still be my preference. I don't believe, though, that this president would be willing to sign a bill that would end up in the repeal of Obamacare. But in the meantime, while we're dealing with it, I consider it my responsibility to go out there and try to fix the parts of that bill that are so detrimental to South Dakotans. And over the last couple of years, we've been able to pass and sign into law 7 different provisions that have done exactly that. So not only were they bills that started in the House with my support, but they made it through the Senate and the President signed them. So while that certainly is my priority to make sure that we have the opportunity to repeal that bill and put in new reforms, I'm going to continue to do what I can to make it work a little bit better for those people that are so affected by it right now.
Are there certain reforms in particular that you're interested in seeing regarding the Affordable Care Act?
Well, we have several that have already been signed into law. One of them was that 1099 small business requirement that we probably talked about quite a bit about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and we were able to eliminate that through legislation. There was some funding for the IPAB board, which funded that board that would make decisions based on what our seniors could get treatments for if they were signed up into the exchange programs. We also eliminated some slush funds that were tied to Obamacare. But I'm a sponsor of a bill out in D.C. that would do some real health care reforms that I feel like would drive down costs for every American. It increases competition across the country by allowing people to buy insurance policies across state lines. If I could look in Florida or California for an insurance policy that worked better for me and my family, I think that that makes sense, and it would cause the insurance industry to become much more competitive. Also create a risk pool nationally that would help cover folks with pre-existing conditions. South Dakota had one that worked very well and got a lot of people covered that had those kind of struggles, and if we perpetuated that in a nationwide business, we would get more folks covered for pre-existing conditions at a more affordable cost. And then also allow some tax breaks for people who did buy health insurance and allow kids to stay on their parents' plans until they're 26 years old. You know, some of those are just common sense incentives, which I always try to support rather than mandates that may came out of the federal government.
Before our conversation, Congresswoman, there was a report from Charles Michael Ray regarding Native American issues, and one person he talked to on that report was critical of Republicans. What has been your relationship with working with Native Americans here in South Dakota in your work in Congress?
Yes, I heard that report, and it made me sad that that is the kind of feedback we're hearing. I have spent quite a bit of time with our tribes in South Dakota and have been able to get some initiatives that they needed done through Congress and get some of their policies dealt with that they've been struggling with. And I'm hopeful that we can all work together to make sure that we have more successes there. One of the provisions, as I visited with our tribes across South Dakota that were involved in agriculture operations, they told me they didn't necessarily know about farm programs they were eligible for. So part of the farm bill legislation that I had included in the final package said that there would be an Office of Tribal Relations established within USDA that would specifically network with the different tribes across the country and make sure that they knew which programs they could qualify and participate in if they were involved in agricultural practices. And that was signed into law, which should help them with those kind of communication issues. I also have been a sponsor of a bill that would prevent the National Labor Relations Board from having jurisdiction over tribal businesses. One of the real fears that tribal governments face is that another governmental entity from the federal level would come in and say that they have jurisdiction over businesses that they're trying to operate on tribal lands. And our tribes are sovereign entities where there should be no jurisdiction issues. So that bill would define it clearly in statute that the NLRB would not be able to come in and to enforce some kind of regulatory process on top of those businesses. But beyond that, I've been able to work to make sure that we've got other provisions to protect our tribes and make sure that their funding issues have been addressed as well.
Another one of the issues that's been discussed in the U.S. Senate campaign this fall, as well as the gubernatorial race, is the Keystone XL pipeline. What is your position on that, and what are your thoughts on why the president is waiting to approve that?
Well, I support the Keystone Pipeline and the construction of it. It would cross through western South Dakota, and I believe it's an important component of our all-of-the-above American energy supply plan. We certainly should take opportunities to purchase our energy supplies from friendly neighbors rather than relying on sources from the Middle East or other entities that could potentially be funding terrorist organizations or enemies of the United States. And also, you know, this has been a bit of a political issue. I think it's been used by organizations, political parties, environmental activists to try to create a defining issue in a political season where things can go one way or the other based on the passion of one issue. So, but for South Dakota, it just makes sense that we would allow this kind of pipeline to come through. We had one that was built across our state about 6 or 7 years ago that we've had little to no issues with. It's not too far from my home, and I was able to watch it during construction and see what the results have been and how the landowners have been impacted. The property taxes that it would bring into some of those western counties is critical to making sure that their schools have funding and that their county governments have an opportunity to receive some revenue to fix up their roads and bridges, which are in so much need. But also we see a real glut on our railroads and our roads from the North Dakota oil that's moving. And to be able to move some of that oil off the rail and off the road into a pipeline would be wonderful and would allow us to get our commodities to market that much quicker and more affordable than it is today.
When do you return to Washington, D.C. for the final weeks of Congress?
We will return after the election within a few days. We've got a lot to do, though. We will stay there, hopefully, and come up with another budget agreement that will keep the priorities funded. But we've got some reauthorizations that need to be accomplished and several tax provisions that need to be visited. I believe we have 55 to 60 different tax extenders that need to be dealt with before the end of the year so that people really know what their tax situation will be in order to conduct business on time. And so we've got a lot of things on our agenda to do, and hopefully when we get back, everybody's ready to work.
Do you see any danger of the sort of environment of last year with the government shutdown, or do you think everyone will be able to work together on these final bills for this Congress?
You know, I don't see a government shutdown situation, but what I am concerned about is if we see a situation where Republicans were to take control of the Senate in this election, and we go back to D.C., and some of the Democratic leadership in the Senate would choose not to do anything and wait until the new Congress is sworn in January to leave a lot of these agenda items to be accomplished then. That would frustrate me because we do have important work that needs to get done. It's important it gets done before the end of the year, but traditionally we've seen that at times where if the power and the leadership within an entity, the House or the Senate, changes hands, where little to nothing gets done in the lame duck, and I would hope that that wouldn't be the kind of situation we'd face.
Well, Congresswoman, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Absolutely, anytime.